Jerry Powell was your average guy in a lot of ways. He was an aeronautical engineer. He played the trombone. He had a wife and two sons. They lived in Hackensack and Oradell, New Jersey. But Jerry also led another life. Most evenings for 70 years, he would spend hours tapping a Morse key in his basement, talking with people from places he'd only imagined ever seeing. Jerry was a ham radio operator, and over his seven decades, he amassed a collection of QSL cards. Those are postcards that ham operators send to each other once contact is made to confirm that they've spoken. These cards and the story of ham radio are collected in a new book called Hello World, A Life in Ham Radio. And joining us now from our bureau in New York, Danny Gregory and Paul Sayre, the authors of the book, and good of you to be with us here on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks very much.
If you all are interested in ham radio, give us a call, too. If you're a ham operator, what do you use the radio for, and what faraway lands have you spoken with? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And Danny Gregory, what's this new book? How did you come up with the idea of this?
Well, to be honest with you, when this whole thing began, when I first began this project, I knew nothing about ham radio at all. I am a flea market habitué, and I was in the flea market on 6th Avenue in Manhattan, and I came upon this collection of these cards in an old photo album. There were about 300 of them, and they just struck me right away because they came from all over the world, and they spanned 75 years of Jerry's collection and his time on the air. So I knew that there was something intriguing about this, but I just didn't know what it was. I went home and I sort of studied it, and I started to discover that it was ham radio, and I learned a little bit about it. And as Paul and I got involved with the project, we learned more and more about the stories behind all of these people that Jerry was speaking to, and the entire sort of community aspect of this hobby.
Well, Paul, give us a little background of ham radio. When did it got started? The last century.
Well, I'm probably not the person to Danny's probably more appropriate person to ask that question to, because he did the writing, I did the designing, we both did the concepting for it. Danny is also we have since authoring this, well, in the process of authoring the book, we both became hams as well and took our license exams, and we have technician tickets right now. But I have been extremely shy about actually getting on the air. I do a lot of listening. But ham radio, amateur radio, began in the early 1920s, and it was an extension of kind of a new technology, and there was a lot of confusion on the airwaves in the early days where there was a lot of interference happening, and there was a lot of confusion basically because there was no rules set up, very similar to the internet right now, I think, in a lot of ways.
Well,
I mean,
it got started as, guys who basically had their own radio station. They got to play.
Right. I mean, when it first began, if you can imagine a situation where it's not like today where people have gone from television to the internet in terms of learning about the world. If you imagine a guy like Jerry living on a farm on rural Route 4 in the middle of Kansas, which is where he grew up, and he really had no contact with the outside world. And suddenly this technology emerges, and a boy can get a crystal and build a simple radio and suddenly can start listening at first to other places and eventually to talk to them. It was an incredibly exciting time, but it was also transforming to his worldview, really, because within a month or two of getting on the air, he spoke to people in the next county. A month later, he was speaking to people in the next state. And within about 3 months, he was speaking to people in New Guinea, which, is a pretty incredible story. And, I think that he ultimately became more and more involved with technology because of his involvement with ham radio. And he studied to become an aerospace engineer, which, again, at the beginning of the Depression, in the middle of rural Kansas, wasn't a particularly useful skill to have. But ultimately he devoted his life to technology, I think, because of this hobby and how it excited him and opened his world up.
Danny, we mentioned that the hams exchange these QSL cards, and you've published a lot of them in this book, Hello World, and they're remarkable things. They tell you a great deal in a postcard-sized communication.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, they're all virtually the same size. But if you imagine that, some were made by a local printer in a small town in Russia, or in the Soviet Union. Others were made in a photo studio in a station in Antarctica. Others were made by hand drawing or hand coloring in a mimeograph. And then still others are made with very slick, modern printing technology. So the graphic design aspect of it is really diverse. And that's really the thing that struck me right away about these cards is how they were of the time and place from which they came. You know, and they're all individualized as well. They represent the interests of the particular ham. So a lot of them have photographs of perhaps the ham sitting in front of some massive rig with dials and knobs behind him, but other times, you know, standing in a plantation by his home or in the capital of his country, just to let his new friends who he'd met on the air know more about him and where he came from. You mentioned at the beginning of the segment that Jerry spoke with his Morse code key. That was really only at the beginning. Most of his contacts were voice, so they were really able to have a pretty human connection, and I think that the QSL card is sort of a physical manifestation of that and a souvenir.
Many of these QSL cards are published in a new book called Hello World, A Life in Ham Radio. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Our guests are Danny Gregory and Paul Sayre, and let's get some listeners involved. Go to Bob, who's on the line with us from Avon, Ohio.
Hi, I've been licensed since 1963, I guess, and I'm a QSL manager for a station in Barbados, and if it hadn't been for the meeting of Mark over the radio and the association via ham radio, my wife and I probably would have never gone down there, and we had the opportunity on our 25th anniversary, we went to Barbados for a couple weeks and had a real good time.
What is the attraction?
I don't know, the talking to people all over the world. You're doing it yourself, getting into a pileup on DX and breaking a pileup and making a contact with that rare station. And, you know, you're able to do that and outfox some of the other DXers that are trying to get that contact.
DXers, long-distance communication.
Right. And the guys that chase a lot of the countries called DXers, they belong to a DX club in northern Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And, all we do is chase DX and look for people that we haven't talked to in strange parts of the world.
Yeah, a lot of hams like Bob are very interested in the sort of competitive aspect of the hobby, which is trying, for instance, to speak to somebody in every single state in the Union, mm-hmm. or trying to reach the different zones around the world.
Or all the counties.
Yes, sorry, Bob.
Exactly. The county hunters that try to get all 3,000 counties in the country.
Wow. You mentioned a pileup that's like a log jam.
Yeah, you'll have a rare station on the air, what we call the expeditions, where people will go someplace that normally isn't active on ham radio just to get it active. And it seems like the whole world is trying to talk to them at the same time.
Neil,
go ahead.
Excuse me. The base reason for this kind of whole culture that's been built up, the competitions and the QSL cards, is this basic kind of premise and basic reason that the amateurs have access to these frequencies, is that it's a backup emergency communication system. So DXers going and taking their gear to a remote island somewhere and communicating quickly to as many people as they possibly can makes for better radio operators in times of emergency.
Exactly, and I think a lot of times DXpeditions will take sophisticated gear with them to a third world country, and when they leave, they'll have trained local hams in how to use the equipment. So the countries and places that normally would have no contact with the outside world now do. Jerry spoke to people, for instance, there was a couple of guys who were doing a de-expedition in Afghanistan, and they would set up their antenna, and one day the Taliban would shoot it down, the other day the Northern Alliance would shoot it down. You know, so they were really there on the front lines, but the point of it was that if there was some kind of an emergency, they would be able to speak to somebody and to get help. And that's always...
Some of these expeditions, besides being training the people, the manufacturers of the different equipment we use will sometimes donate it to the expedition, and they can leave it behind for the people at the places that they were to use for their communications.
Right. Another thing that Jerry was very interested in and motivated a lot of his contacts globally was the fact that he was a sort of a news junkie, and he would listen to NPR, or he would read the New York Times, and he would find out, okay, there's some story on page 3 about a situation in Africa. Let me see if I can reach somebody in that country. And he would, you know, tweak his gear, basically, and it would take him often weeks to reach somebody, a local ham, and see, is there somebody in the United States they might want to contact? Mm-hmm. Is there something else that he could do to offer help? And as a result, he made, you know, more than just sort of coincidental contacts with people, but really contacts that meant a difference to their welfare.
Well, thanks, Bob, very much.
Yeah, there's one more aspect of it that we haven't covered yet. We're talking DX and stuff like that. I've got a VHF and a UHF mobile radio in my car, and we use it to communicate just when we're driving along the road, and I use it when I'm going to work at midnight to talk to truckers and try to stay awake.
Yeah.
In the case of an emergency somewhere, amateurs or hams will take their mobile rigs and go into the area where the emergency occurred and maintain communications for people that don't have cell phone service or anything else anymore.
Yeah, that was a critical factor in the recent shuttle disaster. Three of the astronauts actually who were killed were hams, and hams coordinated the search for the debris after the accident, because they were really the only form of communication that could work in the remote areas of the Southwest.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. Obviously, there's much more we could do, but thank you both very much for coming in.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you.
Danny and Paul are Danny Gregory and Paul Sayre, the authors of the book Hello World, A Life in Ham Radio, and they were with us from our bureau in New York. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.